The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This is Guardian Insights, elevating business to the next level with Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler. Keith and Jonathan each have over 25 years spearheading business transformation programs for Fortune 1000 companies. Keith Koo is an expert on marketing and advertising, risk management, and risk mitigation. Jonathan Ziegler's background is in enterprise sales, management consulting, and marketing. Together, they're the managing partners of Guardian Insight Group, leveraging the diverse knowledge in industries such as technology, financial services, fintech, healthcare, energy, and retail. And they're here to help you break out from your current mindset, make a revolutionary shift in your business goals, and achieve greater success. Now, your hosts for Guardian Insights, Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler.
Welcome to Guardian Insights, elevating business to the next level. I am your host, Keith Koo, and in the studio with me today is my co-host, Jonathan Ziegler. In our last episode, we had a very lively discussion on everything blockchain with Doug Park of Park & DeBodge, attorneys at law. And we got a lot of great response, Jonathan.
So tell me a little bit more about where this is important, because I was kind of running out of time with Doug when we were talking to Doug Park. He's a super attorney, and I know that he's got some amazing background with regards to financing and blockchain and ICOs, the initial coin offerings that we discussed last time. But tell me a little bit more about where this is appropriate before we get into today's subjects.
Well, I think it's appropriate because blockchain is in the news, whether people realize it or not. Usually people have heard it in the last 4 to 5 years as Bitcoin, a cryptocurrency that has just gone through the roof. I think the valuation as of last week or this week had crested $6,000 per coin. And so people think of blockchain as Bitcoin, but blockchain is just so much more, and many, many industries are looking at how to adopt blockchain in their own, for their own purposes. Doug had talked about representing a company that is changing the rental.
Oh, yeah, Rentberry.
Right, Rentberry, that's changing the way that people are thinking about leases and contracts.
Yeah, so let me ask this. I mean, this is one of those things where we've had a lot of experience, especially in the last year or so, where people have come to us and asked us about, you know, what blockchain's all about, the processes behind it, what an initial coin offering may involve or entail, and Park & DeBodge are actually partners of ours that we can help with. Would this be something that the typical business might consider, or is this something that's specialized? Help me understand this a little bit more, Keith.
Yeah, what we were talking about is we Silicon Valley, hub of innovation for years and years. A lot of times startups, a frequent term we're using, rocket riders and rocket builders. The rocket builders are just going really fast and coming out with that next great idea. Well, when it comes to blockchain, there are actual regulations involved that people don't realize. We're still in this gray area in a lot of people's minds. Is this really a currency? Is this something else? I think I had read, I forget which country, but this past week, they're considering an asset class a commodity versus a currency.
Right.
And why I bring that up is there are always laws and regulations that people might have been able to skirt before, ignore before. But with something like blockchain, you really can't do that.
Right. And we had talked about this being kind of in its infancy. As I used the baseball analogy, it was the first batter in the first inning. So there's a lot to learn and a lot to be concerned about as far as blockchain and Bitcoin and initial coin offerings are concerned. So let's talk a little bit more about that next time. I don't want to necessarily drag this out too much, but what else do you think is important in terms of our conversations? I mean, we've talked a lot of things. We've talked about cybersecurity. We've talked about risk management, risk mitigation. We've talked about the whole Bitcoin and blockchain area. What are some of the other things that we need to bring out in terms of helping the business community get a handle on what's going on out there in today's world?
Well, I think we've done, as you mentioned, we've done a lot of talking just because of the way the events have transpired the last couple of months around cybersecurity breaches, et cetera. But when we think about how to really empower companies, let's just go back to the basics. And one of those things that I think any company can do is actually cut costs. And really, when we say about cutting costs, I think a lot of people have a fear that usually involves layoffs or cutting people. But there are a lot of techniques that companies can choose to adopt that can cut costs in their environment without really impacting their people.
Interesting. I mean, I don't disagree with you, but I'm kind of concerned about that. The first knee-jerk reaction that I've always experienced, especially in corporate America, is, you know, you get somebody coming in to cut people. They think that that's the fastest way to cost savings. Is that not the conventional wisdom in corporate America right now?
Well, it's been that way for many, many years. I mean, we can talk about McKinsey, a very well-known and well-respected strategic consulting firm that, you know, a lot of people associate automatically with cutting costs and then cutting people.
Mm.
I think you and I, we can talk about a use case where we were brought in to identify cost savings because the company either had to cut expenses or cut people. It was pretty black and white in that regard. And in this particular case, they actually did choose to cut people, but only in resulting increasing their costs by the next year.
So let me ask that. I mean, that it's contradictory to me. If you're given the choice, and this is a corporate executive's perspective or maybe even the board's perspective, the motivator for a publicly traded company is obviously shareholder value or building shareholder value. If a company is asked by their board to make a hard decision, wouldn't you naturally want to try and cut the expenses first or the costs around the hard and solid goods before you cut your people? I mean, your people are your biggest asset, right?
Absolutely. Your people are always your biggest asset. I think the challenge with the problem statement you just said, and usually here in the Valley, we haven't had to see this since, you know, 2008 from a macro perspective, macroeconomic perspective. But what usually happens in these scenarios is that some triggering event happens. So let's just use the mortgage crisis of 2008 or the financial downturn. There were, as an industry class, companies had to cut costs and have to cut them rapidly. Oftentimes, and this is my hypothesis, that there are executives who are in charge of an operation, but may not be close enough to the operation to know what they can actually trigger in terms of an actual cost savings or a cost cutting from, let's say, a vendor. And instead, they think the easiest move to make or the company's move to make is to decrease people.
So if you wholesale whack a group of people, and then you realize after the fact, oops, because that happens.
Yes.
I mean, I'm not trying to play on the ego or anything like that, because I think, you know, genuinely and generally, an executive at a corporation is not trying to cut people first. I think that's the biggest misnomer that we could probably identify with. And that is because, like I said earlier, people are their biggest asset. It's the most expensive asset to retain, but it's also the most expensive asset to train and get up to speed with a project or with an operational perspective. So an executive has to make a decision, maybe like you said, in a split second. And the consideration is they don't know enough about their operations. That to me, I'm sorry, I'm going to disagree. I think that's wrong.
Well, no, I think executives are responsible to know their operation, but do they actually know all the nuances? I mean, you know, I've worked for companies that have had 10,000 suppliers. And out of those 10,000 suppliers, maybe 50, maybe 20 are your most critical ones.
But at the same time, those 20 or 50 most critical ones are the ones that you can probably bring to the table and say, hey, look, we're all hurting. We all have an issue. We need to be concerned with how we're going to address this because, hey, we either cut you completely, unless you're mission critical. And even in that situation, mission criticality can still be negotiated, right?
Well, yes. Mission criticality can be negotiated in terms of how much it's going to cost to support that mission criticality.
Mm-hmm.
But those are conversations that should happen. It's just like we've talked about many times. A supplier relationship is just like a marriage,
right?
Especially your critical suppliers.
Right.
And if you're not treating it like a relationship, you're really better off not having to have engaged the supplier first. But we talk about the term outsourcing,
right?
Right. And outsourcing is when you've given up an operation and you've planned this out ideally, and you've given up the operation to another company to maintain for you. And normally what we're saying is there's a core versus context conversation, which says that I know enough about my operation, to your point, Jonathan, that I can give up some part or all of it to another company to do it faster, more efficient, or cheaper.
So one of those two or three things, but not necessarily all three of them. I mean, this is one of those situations where, again, you expect the CEO, for example, or the president of a company to know very well what's going on, at least to a level where he or she could safely say, hey, I can get by with maybe half of what I've got. Not people, but the operational side of the software package, for example. Or maybe there's a support piece that needs to be renegotiated or something like that. Does that make sense?
It absolutely makes sense. And this is where we were saying in previous episodes that the concept of vendor risk or third-party risk or supplier risk becomes very important, because without doing that true analysis, you still may not know.
Okay. So when we come back, let's talk a little bit more about what this vendor risk consideration looks like. You can reach us at gigsv.biz. That's gigsv.biz, or toll free 1-888-388-6739. That's 1-888-388-OPEX. And we'll be right back.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888-388-OPEX. That's 888-388-OPEX. 888-388-OPEX. Now, back to Guardian Insights, elevating business to the next level. Once again, your hosts, Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler.
Welcome back to Guardian Insights, elevating business to the next level. I'm your host, Keith Koo, and I'm with Jonathan Ziegler, my co-host. In our last segment, we had just gotten started on a topic about how can companies save costs without cutting people. And we had segued into, even before that, a conversation around understanding your supplier relationships when you're thinking about cutting your supplier's costs instead of cutting people. So, Jonathan, we were up to the point where third-party risk, vendor risk, supplier risk, these are all mechanisms that can measure how risky it is to be doing business with a company. But more importantly, the work behind that is the assessment of understanding why you're in that business to begin with.
Sure, and it makes sense. I mean, the consideration for me is, and I'm trying to bring this up a level, the CEO or the CFO or the board level decision makers have two clear goals, at least in my understanding. Number one is making sure that shareholder value is improved or increased, especially in a publicly traded situation. But even in a private situation, the goal is to maintain profitability and possibly maintain lifestyle for the people that are involved without excessive need to rely on a vendor or rely on vendors. And you had mentioned previously that, you know, in some cases you had 10,000 vendors in your previous corporate experience. And I've been one of those vendors, and that's my specialty, right, is being on the other side of the table from you. And I think that's an interesting perspective, too, because when you come to me and say, hey, I've got a problem and I need your help, I actually appreciate that as a sales guy, because now it gives me an opportunity to help you be creative. And we've talked about this, where potentially lengthening a contract or changing terms and conditions of a contract could be an interesting solution for everybody, right? So let's take it up a step, thinking about how the corporate executive or the C-level executive or the board member has to look at this from a holistic perspective. It's not just about cutting people or saving people. It's about what's the value to the company or the shareholders, right? And the stock price in a publicly traded situation. So how do we adjust or address something like that? This is kind of where we're kind of bringing a full circle.
Right, Jonathan. I think you're asking two separate questions. And again, these might be advanced topics for people who are just thinking about what would I do if I were told that I needed to cut costs by 5%,
10%. Well, what if you don't want to have to be told? What if you want to do it proactively?
No, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm saying that what we were mentioning is normally when you hear about, you know, massive layoffs or layoffs of a given number, and that is usually a triggering event. Something happened with your business, sudden change. I mean, you can see it with lots of retailers right now.
Right.
Right? So Sears Canada is entirely gone, right? And lots of other retailers in a similar situation. So let's talk about it in two scenarios. So in flight, you just had a significant event to your business that requires cost cutting to some magnitude.
Mm-hmm.
And again, 5, 10, 20, whatever percentage. You are going to be in reactive mode. You're going to look at really carefully what I need to do. And it's unfortunate that many times organizations choose to look at where can we cut costs easiest, and they think it's people.
Right.
On the other scenario, if you have enough time, which I say that now is a good time, to plan to understand how you're – because you were asking me earlier, well, isn't a C-level – in charge of their operation, shouldn't they know
shouldn't
exactly?
Shouldn't they know? Yeah, they should know exactly where things stand. And even if they're new, like I said earlier, brought in as a result of that triggering event. Because in some cases, you bring a CEO or a CFO in to fix things once something has happened. I mean, let's talk about how the cybersecurity breach with Experian, I mean, or Equifax, I'm sorry. We gotta fix that. But Equifax, I mean, they let everybody go because that's bad publicity for them to keep those people around because the mistake happened on their watch.
Right. And that was a case where, again, in previous episodes, we talked about incident management. All these things are interrelated, and people are looking at these as one-off events or individual events. But if you actually had the right strategy on how to handle the whole life cycle of all these events, then you wouldn't have to be so reactive. You know what to do. So back to the question of you're a C-level. Either you already have the operation, you're brought in to fix an operation. There's some amount of time that you have, you hope, to get a lay of the land. But not always. And sometimes it's like, okay, well, Jonathan, we brought you in to clean up, fix things. Your first step is, well, you want to create a buffer for yourself. The first thing that human nature is you might decide to get rid of a number of people.
I'm going to fire everybody. I'm walking in. I'm cutting everybody's head off.
Right. And then I'll figure it out after.
Right. But then you're stuck, aren't you? I mean, think about it. If you get rid of all the tribal knowledge, if you walk in and you say, okay, the board has empowered me to make this determination or this decision, and I come in and I whack everybody, what am I left with? I'm left with hearsay. I'm left with what's possibly written documentation, right? But maybe not, of a situation that occurred, and I'm stuck. And maybe my own skill set or my own knowledge is strong enough to carry me through, but why would I want to do that to myself?
Right. Here's a joke that maybe you've heard before. So a CEO is transitioning and they are leaving the company and they prepare three envelopes for their successor. So they've left. The new CEO comes in and on the whiteboard it says, welcome to the new role. And as you come up with your first three sets of challenges, open the envelope. I have advice for you.
Which envelope?
So the first envelope. So the CEO is there for about 6 months and comes with a major crisis. They decide to open the first envelope. The first envelope says, okay, your first crisis, you can handle this. Blame me. I'm the predecessor.
Blame the guy who got run out on a rail.
So that crisis blows over. CEO thinks they've dodged a bullet. And then another 6 months goes by, and the next crisis happens. And they said, oh, no, what am I going to do? Well, my predecessor had some good advice. I'm going to open the second envelope. They open the second envelope, and the envelope says, okay, welcome to your next crisis. Don't panic. Time to do a reorganization. Which is kind of where you were going with the last.
This is B-school. This is B-school basics. Keep going. I'm curious what envelope number three says.
So another 6 months goes by, and then another major crisis happens, and the CEO says, I have no idea what to do. I don't think this person will have great advice for me, but it's been good twice so far. So they open the last envelope, and it says, time to prepare three envelopes.
Yeah, I like that. Because the 18-month tenure rule doesn't necessarily ring any truer than it does here in Silicon Valley. Right.
I mean, we see it with CISOs, CISOs. We see it with CIOs.
SVP or VPs of sales, too. The average tenure used to be, I think, 13 or 14 months in Silicon Valley. Maybe it's gone up a little bit, but I don't know.
But all joking aside, I mean, these are the realities of being a corporate executive.
Yeah.
And all we're saying is that there are different ways to handle that type of situation.
So let's get into a couple of those considerations. We've talked about in the past on some of our other shows solutions around each of these challenges that we've brought up. So let's talk a little bit about what we're good at and what we know to be, you know, true, so to speak, in 90% or 100%, depending on how confident we are on the given day. Some of these examples, and I know we've got a little bit of time left right now, but let's talk a little bit about some of those things.
Well, what we're really good at, Guardian Insight Group, is we're really good at identifying cost savings and saving you money without necessarily laying off people. Yeah. And how that what I mean by that is oftentimes when we're brought in initially for an engagement is that hey, Keith, hey, Jonathan, we need to save money, but we don't want to affect people. Can you do that for us? And we go through a methodology of understanding your landscape between your operation and your suppliers and seeing where the opportunities are.
Okay. So one of the other considerations that I know we've talked about in previous shows is realistically looking at the holistic approach that a company's taking. When we come back in our next segment, we'll talk a lot more about what that looks like and what we believe to be a standard rule of thumb, so to speak. But in the meantime, if you need any additional support from us, please feel free to reach out. You can reach us toll-free 1-888-388-6739. And that's 1-888-388-OPEX. There's a reason we call it OPEX, and it's one of those key points that we talk about. You can also find us on the web at gigsv.biz. That's gigsv.biz. And we'll be back in just a bit.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888-388-OPEX. That's 888-388-OPEX. 888-388-OPEX. Now, back to Guardian Insights, elevating business to the next level. Once again, your hosts, Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler.
Welcome back to Guardian Insights, elevating business to the next level with your hosts, Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler.
Hey, so Keith, last segment we were talking about how we were going to bring up the potential ways that we come in and we engage with our customers and clients. And this is one of those situations where I really want to talk about one specific use case. We may have time to get into another one, but let's just talk about this one to start with. So we have this very large publicly traded customer here in Silicon Valley that has basically set the tone for payment processing around the globe. They are primarily and predominantly focused in the United States, but they do have considerations elsewhere. They were really interesting for me from our perspective in terms of what we've done for them and what we're still doing for them, based on the fact that they actually have a vendor management organization, or so-called vendor management organization. And they were talking about risk mitigation and some considerations around their mission critical solutions that they need to rely on as far as vendors. So why don't we kind of set the stage of what we were asked to engage with them on, and then we can talk about how we saved some serious money for them.
Yeah, well, this is a really great example. And, you know, again, techniques we've done for almost 25 years. So this particular company was being spun off from an even larger by size company, not necessarily dollar market cap, but just in terms of people, processes, and systems. And so this is really, in essence, we've done a lot of divestiture work, but this is a very large divestiture. And so in this case, they really needed help in understanding when you basically have big brother spinning off little brother, to use an analogy, what is it that they were left with? So we actually spent a lot of time going through all their supplier agreements and really looking at how those agreements tied to their business needs of today. Because in some cases, you have contracts way older than a decade or even more.
Well, I know that they had a bunch of MSAs that were, I want to say, pre-digital. That's how old some of those were.
Yeah. In those cases, those contracts were even in the infancy of the technology of today.
Right. So what does that mean to the average executive or the average board member today, for example? That, you know, if you have an old agreement, I mean, we're talking some of these were in the 90s, like some of the telecom considerations. What did that mean? I mean, that was one of those things that actually we were both scratching our heads on when we got hold of those documents.
Yeah. So let's focus in right now just on telecom. So if you're using telecom, which most companies do, and, you know, whether it's AT&T, Verizon, Sprint, CenturyLink, what have you. What happens is you get into a rhythm of, I've set up my telephony, I set up those lines, I pay for those circuits, and I don't think about it again. It's just like your utility. What you may not be aware of, you might not have a mature team who has the experience, you don't realize that rates change often. Technology improves, right? We can think about when I was at Cisco Systems, that was the whole advent of going from voice to digital voice.
Right.
And there was massive cost savings of that, but there were a lot of companies who were late to the game and didn't adopt.
Well, not only late to the game, but I think they were unaware of the challenge or the consideration around changing, right? Because it's a subtle change. It's not necessarily something that you or I would recognize right off the bat unless we go looking for it.
Right. So we're talking about this very large customer of ours only in that they have a little bit of everything. They have telephony, they have software, they have hardware, they have outsourcing contracts, managed service contracts. But that's not to say that any of the listeners can save money in their own organizations at any time. And why we say that is it's just like your cell phone bill or your cable bill. How often are you trying to renegotiate with your cable company or your cell phone company?
That's a really good point, Keith, because I think one of the things that's really intriguing, and I'm definitely one of those people where I call the cable company every year and say, hey, my bill just went up. I'm contemplating leaving. What are you going to do? And until they have the analytics to watch that I'm not really looking to leave, because they know that in the last 24 hours, for example, I've watched 3 shows and I've been on the pay-per-view or whatever. Because that's part of the problem, too, is that a lot of people don't understand what's on the back end for the vendor, right? But in this case, I call them all the time and I say, hey, I want the next deal for the next year, because otherwise it's way expensive right now. I just happened to see a commercial the other day for a competitive solution that's only $35 a month. I'd love to go look at that one, but I just don't know if it's going to have the variety that I want. And that's just one small example. But even as an individual, as a C-level or a corporate owner or even a small business owner, you can aggressively go after your own personal cell phone or your business cell phone plan and or your business cable if you have it, because I know a lot of people subscribe to business solutions like that. But in this case, we're talking about a pretty large customer that has spread out all over the world and has multiple thousands of potential contracts. How do we, you know, address something like that?
Well, let's go back to that exact example, and we'll just continue to focus on telecom. There was a program I ran where I came into an organization that had over $50 million a year of telecom spend globally. And this is a case where the existing procurement team had always felt that they had the right skill set. And they were a really good procurement team, but they really hadn't been challenging their suppliers on the rates. So you could be, you know, an AT&T or a Sprint or Verizon and say, hey, you know, customer, I'm going to save you 5 or 10%, but their volume was increasing. So
there's no incentive.
Right. And the vendors can offer whatever they want because that volume
is so big,
is taking that over.
Yeah, makes over.
But in this case, we knew that they had never looked holistically at their entire telecom spend. So when we talked about growing up into the digital age, companies were adopting telephony like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were able over a multi-year period to cut that telecom expense down into the $30 million range. But we did that structured because what happens is, especially talk about technology, there's hurdles in place. It's not exactly like your home cable or your cell phone because there's often different business processes that rely on each other. And what I mean by that is let's talk about your data center. Your data center, if it's the lifeblood of your company,
yeah,
in terms of the operation,
yeah,
you probably architected it if you did it in a smart fashion to have built-in redundancy.
Right.
And what tends to happen is the redundancy also goes overboard, where now you have multiple telecom carriers, multiple circuits. What we say multiple circuits is that, you know, you're basically, it's like suspenders in a belt. And we go in with our analysts and say, hey, do you realize that without touching people, without touching your architecture from an operations perspective, we can give you the same or better performance, lower your cost, with no operational impact to you at all?
So take a step back. You cut expenses from $50 million to $30
million? Yes.
And how long did that take?
Well, the 50 to 30 million took 2 years.
Okay. What would you estimate the investment by your team at that time was in terms of man hours or reviews or things like that? Just kind of give a ballpark.
Well, in this case, because there were so many telephony agreement, individual contracts,
mm-hmm,
We probably took 60 days with a team of five people.
So 60 days. So let's talk about five people. That's, you know, 300 man days. That's less than a year. Mm-hmm. But that saved your company $20 million?
Yep. A year. So remember,
I know, a year. That's what I'm saying.
When we talk about telecom expenses, this one example, it's $50 million a year.
Yeah, I understand that. Right. And that's what I'm trying to reiterate. That's a huge cost savings for a very minimal investment.
Right. And the sad thing is, Jonathan, that most companies can achieve this.
Yeah.
But they're locked into fear, uncertainty, and doubt, and how that happens through no bad intent. It's people who are kind of stuck to the old ways of doing things.
Okay. And so being stuck to the old ways is something that's a kind of, let's call it a norm, you know, generally. Silicon Valley tends to do things differently, right? They like to be creative. They like to be innovative. They like to be on the cutting edge, so to speak. So wouldn't this be one of those situations where somebody would have already come up with a solution?
Well, I'm not sure if I follow you on how you're tying that to the innovation. The innovation happens definitely in products and solutions.
Right.
But once your company is going, once the IT is in place, the technology, the underlying technology, the tools for the team to build on top of those products, that doesn't get looked at.
That's exactly what I was trying to get at.
Okay.
I was trying to be a little sarcastic, not really, but trying to get the point that even, again, talking about the C-level executive or the board member coming in and saying, hey, it's time for us to clean house. The first thing they want to do is go whack the people. This is one of those situations where they should stop and take a look around and see what the technology or what the solutions look like to help, like, for example, in this telecom situation that we're talking about, right?
Right. I mean, what happens with companies with, you know, again, this can apply to any company, but companies with large budgets,
mm-hmm.
it becomes almost just codified into the operation itself that we're going to maintain this budget. And what I mean by that, let's say that you have an operating budget of $500 million a year.
Yeah.
And you're a growth company, so you're growing by 10% a year. And so your CFO says, well, since we grow by 10% a year, I will allow you to increase your IT budget by 3% a year.
Yes.
So
that the perfect imbalance.
Right. So that $500 million becomes, you know, $515 million.
Right.
So it really, it's kind of counterintuitive, but the executive is going to say, hey, I have a $515 million budget. Why would I ever want to get rid of any portion of that?
Yeah, well, and that's the understanding. But that's also one of those counterintuitive considerations that we've talked about in the past, which is the ego, right? If I'm the CFO and I have this budget and I know I have this budget, I'm going to use every penny. But here's the thing. If you can reallocate some of that money to a new growth project and that helps hit the bottom line or the top line, wouldn't you rather do that? Then focus on, and this again goes back to our whole premise today, which is getting rid of people as the, you know, the last ditch resort. So in essence, if the ego is the challenge, we come in and we take that away from the consideration. You've got the budget that we've talked about where the CFO doesn't want to avoid using that full budget, or the CIO may be the one. But let's talk about that in the next segment. The ego being the biggest challenge that we come into contact with in a lot of cases with our customers is it's somebody in the C-level or at the board level who said, come in and fix this problem for us. So Guardian Insights gets brought in. And then we have this challenge where I'm the VMO, the vendor management organization, and I'm the leader of that organization. And I know people, and I'm the one who's going to fix this problem. So therefore, it's up to me. And that's the ego being taken out of the picture. That's what we have to come in and fight for. So when we come back, let's talk a little bit more about that whole consideration around where the financial burden becomes the ego taking over, and how that can be a really big challenge. And that's how we address it. So when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about that. So you can reach us at gigsv.biz. That's G-I-G-S as in Silicon, V as in Valley.biz. Or reach us toll free at 1-888-388-OPEX. That's 1-888-388-6739. And we'll be right back.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888-388-OPEX. That's 888-388-OPEX. 888-388-OPEX. Now, back to Guardian Insights, elevating business to the next level. Once again, your hosts, Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler.
Welcome back to Guardian Insights, elevating business to the next level. I'm your host, Keith Koo, and in the studios with me is Jonathan Ziegler. We were just speaking in the last segment. We're just getting into the heart of what we love to do, which is to save you money. And oftentimes, in order to save you money, we have to get through egos. And when we talk about egos, we're kind of half joking about the egos involved in any executive level thinking. But when we talk about saving money, we really have proven time and time again that we can influence your budget by 5 to 10% without batting an eyelash.
And this isn't just about the saving money. This is about the whole theme of our show today, which is not having to cut people, right? So we're talking about challenging somebody's idea. And again, it may be an executive that's brought in by the board. It may be an executive that has been long serving. But either way, the concept is you don't have to go right to people, because they're your most expensive and most valuable asset.
Right. And I think that's the point, is we don't have to go directly to people. You as an organization, for whatever market dynamics or forces are being applied to you, may eventually have to do that. But we, when we come in, that's not our very first thought. Our very first thought is looking at how you are operating in terms of your people, processes, and systems. And where there are suppliers involved, there are definitely ways for you to improve efficiency by cutting costs.
I'm going to be really blunt here and say that there's a lot of waste out there, period. We've seen it. We've seen it in a lot of customers and a lot of clients. We've seen it where they actually know that they're wasteful, but what comes into play every single time?
Well, I think you're right. There is a lot of waste out there. And again, to your what you were just saying, sometimes there's executives that are consciously aware of the waste that's going on in their organizations, but sometimes they're not. Again, we said it in each of the segments so far, that executives are in charge of the organization. They have to, they're being paid to understand their operation. But when you talk about operations with hundreds or thousands of people and hundreds or thousands of suppliers, you cannot know every single nuance without doing some structural things.
Sure. And I would hate for a CEO to be that deep in the weeds, for example, or a CFO to be that deep in the weeds.
Right. And so just like you have suppliers to help you in doing those types of operations, outsourcers, managed service providers, software companies, you sometimes need to bring in a firm like ours to help you sort all that out.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I was actually going to bring that up too, you know, to wrap up this whole ego thing. One of the things that I just want to be very blunt in saying is it's not about ego. It's about getting paid for what you're supposed to be doing. And that's the same way that we look at it. If you're the executive who's been brought in to fix a problem, or you've been tackling this challenge, you're going to get paid and you're going to be rewarded if you succeed. So why not partner with a company like Guardian Insights? Why not partner with a company that has 25 plus years experience plus our whole staff that can come in and actually evaluate where you are, do a benchmark, and then come in and say, hey, we know we can save 5 to 10%, maybe more.
Well, the initial reaction of even when we say you can save 5 to 10% is that back to, it's not supposed to be about ego. How do I ever explain why I would hire a company like yours to begin with?
Right. Big point. You know, my answer to that is because you need to, because you have to have an outside set of eyes or an outside set of hands to come in and actually go through the challenges that you've uncovered. And maybe you haven't uncovered them, because this is another consideration that we walk into in a lot of cases. Sometimes it's to create a benchmark, and sometimes it's not to solve a problem. Sometimes it's actually being proactive. Am I right?
You're right. I mean, that's where if you liken us to how McKinsey handles people, and again, we're not focusing on the people, you need somebody to take an independent assessment or analysis of your environment. Mm-hmm. And through that process, identify the savings for you.
Right. And let's think about this from their process too. It is designed by our experience to not interfere with your current operations. In other words, your people can continue doing what they're doing until our recommendations come down the pike, right? It's not designed to disrupt or cause a disruption in the business on a day-to-day basis. But what we are intending to do is try and help streamline or recommend different steps that may or may not be underway today. They may just be out of order, for example. You know, you take a step one way and you're actually supposed to respond by textbook or by business school training to go one way. And we also find that sometimes people are absolutely best intentioned in trying to get down that path, but they can't.
Right. And the customers are all varied. They all have different requirements. And so they handle things differently. Mm-hmm. And so when you were just saying that we're doing it we have a do no harm approach to your business.
Yeah.
And what we mean by that is we can certainly lay out all the different steps you could take from, you know, when we, let's use analogies like amputations from your from your body, right? We have an approach where we're not trying to amputate appendages. We're just trying to like trim hair or nails. We joke about it, but this is really the kind of, we have these real conversations with executives.
It's absolutely true. We do have those kinds of conversations with executives. So, you know, again, let's wrap it up. Getting rid of the ego. We get it. We get that, you know, there's a certain type of personality that becomes a C-level executive or a board member. There's a reason for that. But at the same time, the goal is to capitalize on the right people at the right place at the right time. So your people process and your technology are definitely going to be considerations around the horn.
Right. And we keep everything in terms of the one who engages us as a confidential assessment.
Absolutely. So, you know, let's take it a step back to wrap this up, Keith, once and for all. Engaging with Guardian Insight Group is an exercise in, what would you use as the adjective?
It's
success. It's absolutely about success. Making your business succeed, bringing shareholder value, like we talked about in the first segment, and absolutely causing a reduction in costs as being one of our primary drivers so that you don't have to get rid of people first.
Right. A reduction in costs versus a reduction in force.
Excellent. Well, thanks for sharing this week with me, Keith. I think this has been a really interesting conversation. Let's continue this next time. Again, thanks for joining us at Guardian Insights. You can reach us at gigsv.biz. That's G-I-G, S as in Silicon, V as in Valley, .biz, or toll free at 1-888-388-6739. That's 1-888-388-OPEX. And we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Guardian Insights, elevating business to the next level with Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler. For questions or comments about today's program, call 1-888-388-OPEX. That's 888-388-OPEX. And be sure to listen again next week at this time for more Guardian Insights right here on this station.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never before seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.